First I was a Catholic girl, loved the mass, I watched the swirl of smoke from candles burning, while Mary looked up yearning. I got confirmed.
Hello and welcome to the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. We're recording this on Sunday morning, July 24th, 2022. I'm Larry Rhodes, or Doubter 5, and as usual, we have our co-host, Wombat, on the line with us. Hello, Wombat.
Every day, every week, every hour, here I am. I'm the Wombat. Nice to meet you guys.
Every hour, wow. And our guests today are Dread Pirate Higgs. Welcome.
Ahoy.
And from Texas, Sky, welcome.
Good morning.
The Digital Free Thought Radio Hour is a talk radio show about atheism, free thought, rational thought, humanism, and the sciences. And conversely, we'll also talk about religion, religious faiths, gods, holy books, and superstition. And if you get the feeling that you're the only non-believer in your town, well, you're just not. In Knoxville, in the middle of the Bible Belt, we have a group of over 1,000 of us. We'll tell you more about that after mid-show break. Ty, what's our topic for today?
We're talking about two things. We're talking about devils in the details and also a little thing called Jesus measurement units, which we're going to get into as well. But, you know, that's what I like to consider the main course. How about we start with a little bit of carbs to start our morning, and we'll throw it up to our own Dread Pirate Higgs for a weekly invocation.
Arr! Oh, monster, grant me the serenity to know the things I cannot change, the strength to know the things I can, and the noodle to tell the difference.
Ramen. That's one of my favorite ones. We don't hear that one very often, but I think it's really give me the ability. So, you know, I grew up on a show called Conan the Barbarian, or it was really a movie. And it was a comic book before it was a movie. Yeah. And the cool thing about the comic is the guy was so metal in the sense that there's a story where he went to go try to fight this big monster boss. But before that, he went to like this creature that would grant him any wish. Right. Mm-hmm. And when he was able to get the wish, the only thing he asked for before he was about to go through his epic battle was, I just want a fighting chance. Don't make me any stronger. Don't give me a super weapon. Just give me a fighting chance and I'll take care of it from there. And I'm like, that is so respectful. In the same way, we got to use your noodle. You got to have a fighting chance against the waves of ignorance that are coming at you. So don't forget, you got a cool thing up here. And you have all the capability to improve it. Before we go on our topic today, let's do a round table. How's everybody doing today? Dread, looking sharp, looking clean. How you been?
Pretty good. I performed two weddings yesterday.
Ooh, congratulations. Wow.
Yeah.
Two. So,
what's that?
Day. I said two in one day. Wow.
Yeah. So,
is he counting the groom and the bride? Because every wedding.
Yeah, no, I had one in the morning, which was really just to cover off on the legal aspect of it. And then the second one was in the afternoon out at a riverbank. And wow. It was a full-out hand fasting ceremony. And
fasting, what does that mean?
They asked me to wear my holy tricorn and my pirate attire and it was great. It was a really good ceremony. I really enjoyed it.
Is the second one always easier than the first one? Is the first one you just like warm up, you're trying out the new material, and then the second one you're like, okay, I know what swings, I know what bangs, let's go.
Yeah, well, see, as a marriage commissioner, I have a standard script that I would generally read from. Mm-hmm. So it's up to the celebrants, like the couple, to determine what they want to do, because there's four statements that are required under law, and that is to have them declare that there's no lawful impediment why they should not be married. And then the second statement is to ask those present to witness that they're making a declaration to enter wedlock.
So, that's interesting. In U.S., Larry, you can maybe educate me. As far as I'm aware, you can do whatever you want on a wedding, say whatever you want. It's pretty the much. Certificate that makes it legal. The wedding is just a party.
Right.
Isn't that not like that in Canada?
Yeah.
No. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Oh, wow. Yeah, so you could actually just marry people without them realizing and being like, hey, this guy's seeing you guys being married and there's no reason for you not to be married. Congratulations. Well, bye. I'm going to go.
Yeah,
have a
license, yeah, no, the license ties in with the declarations and that's
okay.
And those okay. two things together is what makes it legal.
I'm going to ask one last question.
I can't marry people in their sleep.
Is there a marriage commissioner license that exists?
Yes.
Photo ID?
I have an appointment from, yep, I do. And actually, I'm wearing my tricorn in it.
Nice.
No, I'm appointed by the Ministry of Vital Statistics for a 10-year period to perform marriages.
Cool. Larry.
You know, I was just going to say that the first marriage that I had, I checked their IDs and married them right there at a table in Marley's Tap Room Pizzeria in the old
city. You married people.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm a celebrant for the Rationalists of East Tennessee. And I've also been ordained by the Church of Spiritual something. I can't remember the last
one. Universal Life Church?
I'm in Universal Life
Church. Because I'm ordained with them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm
ordained. Although they're not recognized in Canada officially.
I'm still a little baffled. I thought, so the only thing in US that matters is the certificate, right? That legal certificate, right?
Well, you've got to have the ID to verify who they are, and you've got to get their consent. And usually that's done during the proceedings.
But okay. Other than
that, as long as you got a license and they're both signed off on it, that's pretty much it. You got to file it though. If you never file it, after the wedding, if you don't file it, then it's kind of questionable whether you have a valid marriage or not. So most people file.
Good. I feel like only these rules exist because there was just one crazy commissioner out there who was like, "And you're married, and now you're married, and he's just driving in a bus." It's like ship captain. Ship captain. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
Okay, Larry, catching up with you. How you been? Looking good in those suspenders.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it's a fashion statement. No, nice. They're very utilitarian.
Can you give us a snap before you go into your school about
the red cycles?
My son-in-law, No.
We need to get you one red strap, one green strap.
Yeah.
I don't know about that. What did Captain Kangaroo wear?
Oh, geez. That's a throwback.
Yeah.
That's Red Green Show. It's a Canadian show.
Yeah.
I grew up on Red Green Dread. I won't leave you out there. I respect that show.
They don't find you handsome. They might as well find you handy.
Let's go. Anyway, Larry, how you been?
Oh, fine. I'm not riding my motorcycle. It's just too hot. Other than that, just planning on my Quest 2 and working.
Nice.
But I'm really enjoying my Quest 2 virtual reality.
You keep your stick on the ice. What else can I tell you?
Yeah. Nice.
Cool. Joe Sky, looking good, looking like a fashion statement's ready to happen. How you been?
Yeah, I've been good. I've been really busy. I've been trying to work, do an article a day so I can get ahead on my blog.
Nice. Cool. Very cool. I had a crazy flat tire that happened to me 2 days ago, and I'm so happy it happened to me because I was wanting to change my tires anyway. And I was looking for every excuse not to go and change my tires. So when I finally got the flat tire, I was like, oh, well, if I went and immediately got my tires changed and then this happened, I would have been very upset. But the fact that it like happened when my car was already in a dilapidated state of four wheels, I was just like, fantastic. Now I can clean the whole
thing. It's officially time.
Yes, it was a sign of God to be like, hey, you should change your tires. And me being like, no, not yet. I will be the commander of my own fate. And I finally found a time that worked out well. Oh, really good tire swap and switch. The whole premise was, you know, we have these things in our phones, or actually our phones are tied to the database of all human knowledge and stuff like that. So if there's anything you don't know, just Google it. There on the spot, you'll find YouTube videos on how to do everything. But thankfully I already know how to change my tires. But the first time I did it, I didn't know how to do it, and I had my phone on me. And so what I like is that it's a very detailed process, and much things are covered in very fine detail. And I love details because I'm a detail kind of guy. And the strangest thing that I'm realizing is this phrase that I've heard often is that the devil is in the details. And I ask myself, why is that the case? And so there I am with a flat tire. I'm in the middle of a town that I've not been to. I don't have any way to walk anywhere. And I could pray to get the problem solved. I could be like, God, just fix this problem for me. Or I can go to my trunk, my car, pull out my, you know, my, you know, efficient car jack, get out my spare tire, get out my torque wrench, and then, you know, properly remove all the bolts, put on the temp, inflate it back up again because I have my emergency inflator, because I'm prepared for any sort of emergency that happens while I'm on the road because I've packed myself accordingly. And I go through all the steps and the sequence that they need to be. I put chocks in the front and the back of my car. As I put my car up on a jack, I have a jack stand ready to support the weight of the car. I got all the details of that procedure down, and that's been so helpful to me. And I didn't see the devil once in that whole procedure. But I did realize that there was also a lack of God in that procedure as well. I didn't need to rely on God to help myself get my car tire fixed. And I think that's the concept behind the devil in the detail. There's a concept in religion, or that atheists call religion, called God of the gaps, where it's, if there's something that you don't know, God exists there. He's taking care of it. And the more you know, the smaller that gap gets, which means God of the gaps is getting smaller and smaller as our awareness of how the world works also gets smaller. And I think there's a point to be made that there's a fear of nuance from religious sectors, because nuance, as we begin to understand it, or as we begin to better understand the mechanics of things, will directly imply that there is no God that's in control of, like, say, how cars get fixed, or why we get sick, or why our climate is changing, or how to better interact with people. Like, there's no God there. It's just us. And it's not so much a devil aspect. It's the fact that we can take care of ourselves. We can provide the mechanics of our own success and our own failures. And it's up to us to be accountable for our actions. Larry, I want to throw a question out at you.
All right.
Do you think that there is, in fact, fear from Christianity or any other major religion about scientists trying to, like, figure out nuanced things? And what's the fight against intellectualism about from religious areas? If I can make the question even more straightforward, like, why is it why is there a concentrated effort seemingly from religious sectors to not make sure that we are capable of proper scientific modeling of the universe so that we can figure out how to solve these problems that we've been facing? Like, why? What's the argument there?
I think the main problem just comes from the fact that when science does come up with explanation, a lot of times it doesn't line up with their scriptures.
Boom, there
so,
it is.
So, you know, they take issue with it and say it's not right and it's wrong. We ought to go with our spirit and our feelings and our heart, you know, and because it doesn't go along with the perceived or, I mean, the viewed reality that we experience.
I dig it. It's a challenge. It's a challenge. Dredd, yes. Do you have a comment? Go for it.
Yeah. There's also this idea that they try to diminish scientific explanations through arguments like irreducible complexity.
Yep.
Like, you know, look at the trees, look at an eyeball. You know, how are these things are irreducibly complex, and you know, you can't have something that's
an eyeball.
An eyeball is an eyeball, and there's no precursor to it because it wouldn't function as an eyeball. And of course,
we know that
that's not
are.
True. It's right. Just that's an argument from ignorance, really.
Right.
It's an argument from ignorance. It's one that really badly muddles the water. And it's also one that I find to be dishonest, because there are scientific
disingenuous, right?
Disingenuous. Yeah. Okay. Disingenuous. Thank you. Thank you. Because there are Christians who know biology, who are aware of what evolution is, who understand that it's a very simple model that explains a lot of things, but choose, you know, just through their environment or not to upset anyone, to continue to perpetrate the idea that, oh, okay, well, you know, if I'm paid, or if my career or my social, you know, group depends on me saying these certain things, I'm not going to go against it. I feel like that's both disingenuous and actually harmful. I feel like that's actually harmful.
Well, you know, just as an example, my daughter is quite religious, and she's taking advantage, of course, now of the recent James Webb Space Telescope images to sort of promote the idea that, again, this irreducible complexity, and look at the universe. How could it be so complex and not have an intelligent designer? Again, it's a God of the gaps, as you say, God of the gaps argument, but then also an argument from ignorance. And I don't even communicate with her anymore because, well, and this is actually her thing because she wrote me off as being too skeptical. So anyway, she's content to believe in these ideas at the expense of her familial relationships that challenge those things.
I want to make a point on this, like the idea of being too skeptical. Is it actually maybe there's a devil in the detail? Do you think it is possible for anybody to be too skeptical? And, you know, in my sense, go for it, Dredd. What do you think?
Well, I mean, it would depend on a person's definition of skeptical, right?
Right.
Because some people may just seem or may feel that you're just being a contrarian.
Right.
And that's an important distinction between being skeptical of things that deserve skepticism and just being a contrarian. Cause if you're just trying to pick fights all the time, well, you're not going to make any friends, but, that's distinguished from healthy scientific skepticism, I would say.
So
Dr. Steve Novella makes a good point of in Skeptic's Guide to the Universe.
So change doesn't happen without a challenge. That's the mantra that I've been following for a while.
Cool.
And the cool thing about it is it applies to skepticism as well, to the point where it gives skepticism a bad rap, because the skeptic in the layman term is someone who's always challenging things because they don't take anything at face value and they're always questioning and they're trying to figure out why, right? And it can seem sort of aggressive, but there's obviously different approaches towards asking questions that are both, you know, more passive or more polite or more less confrontational. But in the idea of, is it good to question everything? It absolutely is. And if I'm questioning everything, I can't imagine how I could be even more skeptical. It's just at that point, now I have to learn how to format it in a way that, you know, doesn't make me as aggressive or off-putting, but I'm still questioning people, even if I'm being polite about it. Right. And that's an interesting thing. There's a devil in that detail. Devil in the nuance of it. Joe Sky, I'd love to get your opinion. Do you think that, I'll throw this easier. Do you think Christianity has a problem with people trying to figure out stuff and why?
Well, yes, most definitely. As to the why, I think if you keep the people ignorant, that your religion is going to do better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well put. The more ignorant your followers, the more ardent they are in their support of you. We can almost pull that to any sort of, you know, relationship. I also find
And that takes it back to last week's topic where we, you know, talking about ignorance being bliss, right?
Right.
You know, the blissful are followers essentially of those who would keep them ignorant.
And speaking of previous topics, we had this thing where knowledge is power, and we were talking about how in Catholic circles, there's this idea of a confessional, where like a person will give all their deepest secrets to somebody who's still a part of their social network, who's still talking to all these other people. And it's like, when you disclose that much personal information to somebody, it's very hard to leave that congregation, right? Yeah. You're not going to just like move to the next place because that guy now has collateral on you. Mm-hmm. And that's a person at the end of the day. So, you know, it's a really bad situation.
And your whole family.
Not my family. Larry, I think, We've been hitting this on exactly this nail on the head in that then when we find out things, it often does not fall in line with the dogmatic principles or teachings of any major religion when we figure out new stuff. And so as a result, it's seen as a challenge against that dogma. And so a lot of that dogma tries to fight ahead of time against the efforts or even the interest to try to figure out the matters of the world, because that would only cause them to lose power if the results are that it wasn't their God or their principles or their narrative that was responsible for events in the world. And I find like if that's the case, then we should, as skeptics, only continue to promote people to try to figure that out and build our awareness on those key points. Speaking of awareness, Dredd Pirate, I thought you had some interesting concepts going on.
Well, you know, and it's funny because, of course, I have brought this up, just ruminating, brought it up about this idea of Jesus units and the idea of a Jesus unit being what was available in terms of scientific knowledge or awareness of the world in 30 AD. And it was funny because I'm reading a book called From Bacteria to Bach and Back by Daniel Dennett. A few days ago, I got to page 113. And there he says, science fiction writer called Robert Anton Wilson. I've never read anything of his, but he proposed the Jesus unit. Ooh. And it was defined.
Wait a second. So you're saying great minds think alike?
Or dummies barely differ. I don't know.
No. You're right.
But anyway, he says, defined as the amount of scientific information known during the lifetime of Jesus. And it was just, I mean, I was just flabbergasted when I read it. And I thought, yeah, what a crazy thing to have happen twice.
Dredd,
you need to read the Illuminatus trilogy, Dredd.
Yeah.
Okay. Anthony Wilson, a classic in its field.
Okay, cool. Yeah. I love good science fiction. So
do you ever feel like sometimes life is like stand-up comedy where you'll tell a joke and people will be like, that's someone else's joke. And you'd be like, but it's so easy to just put together. Like,
you think about Leibniz and Newton coming up with calculus at the same time, or Wallace and Darwin coming up with evolution. I mean, it seems sometimes that things are, you know, that stuff is kind of percolated to a point where there's time for a paradigm change. And all of a sudden, all these people are simultaneously having these great ideas. It's quite remarkable.
It's rock and roll, you know?
I blame the noodly monster, of course. His tentacles are everywhere.
Okay, so let's talk about the Jesus unit. What would you propose?
Well, I was just thinking, because it's like Moore's Law. With respect to technology, where, you know, there's exponential gains, transistors are becoming twice as small, twice as quickly as the former formulation of them, right? And that it's going on an exponential curve, the decrease in size of a chip, say, with going over time. So in half the time, a chip is getting twice as small. You know, and it's working like a logarithmic thing. Scale for kindness, yeah.
I like the idea of a scale that, you know, increments in units the awareness of the world. However, it was such a disconnected world in like 30 AD, right? And a lot of information of the cultures that we had aren't available to us now. So, and not only that, but just so desperately disconnected that it's sort of like, it's a harder thing to capture than compared to today, where it's like we have a much more globally connected world and a much more better understanding of like, what do we all know or at least have access to as a people? Yes, there's people who are still living as if it was medieval times right now. And then there's also people living in space at the same time, too. It's a much more grander time. But like we can track that average much more, I would say, accurately than we did 1,000 years ago or 2,000 years ago.
Sure.
And so I like the idea of a unit to describe awareness. What is the meaning of the unit, and like what are we hoping that that unit does over time?
Well, you know, like if it's a Jesus unit, I think it's just kind of something to sort of intellectually have fun with, because you know certainly a Jesus unit. Sorry, that's my dog.
I hope he's okay.
She's got separation anxiety.
Okay.
Somebody else talk for a minute while I'll.
Sure. Larry, the idea of a Jesus unit is sort of like, hey, what did everybody know at this one point in time? And my thing, or like my
you mean scientifically, what did they? I mean,
I'm going to say scientifically. Let's keep it simple, right? But my issue would be, I think in the grand scope of the universe, like of what the things that we could learn, right? If you know, humans get their stuff together, like anything that we've learned in the last 2000 years would barely be a blip on the Jesus unit scale as a result. Like to say that we could advance to like 10 units, 4 units, 40 units. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like 50,000 years from now, we might have completely different standards of science. Like we might look at what we're doing now and be like, you guys, we're still doing homeopathy. You are still no. This is not science. This is science.
As far as science goes, we're doing the best we can. Right. We make new discoveries every year. We build on the science that we've had before.
Absolutely.
We're standing on the shoulders of giants, as they say,
right?
Because we have the teachings of those who have gone before us. Religion would more or less teach us to ignore that and stay with what is put in the book.
Right.
And, it would stagnate us or be the like ultra conservative values and hold to them.
And that's the weird thing. Science doesn't just get bigger over time. It does as much cleaning out as it does grow. Right. And so 500 years ago, the science that we used to use, a lot of those principles, a lot of those classes or genres of science, we don't do anymore. So like dowsing for like looking for water, we got rid of that. We still have chiropractic, but we got rid of a lot of spiritual healing. Snake oil is now like synonymous with like fake oil. Like that's not supposed to cure you. There's a lot of things that we did back then that if we went back another 500 years would be like, oh, geez, guys, this isn't science at all. This is just putting leeches on your body and expecting that to get rid of migraines or like connect to the stars by like drinking mercury. And you go back another 500 years past that, it's like you aren't praying to gods, but you are burning a lot of stuff with the hopes that, you know, flies will spontaneously regenerate from like pots and of oil and stuff like that. So no germ theory 1,000 years ago. So like, how are you going to claim like, hey, we made the best sewers in the universe? So it's just like, one, you don't know what chlorine is. Two, you haven't made metal. Like you're
you're not disinfecting anything. You use lead when you do.
Yeah. So I'm saying like, if you gave us 500 years from now, would we really look back at the time that we have now and say, here are increments? Or would we say you instead got rid of a lot of stuff? Hopefully that's what I'm hoping for. Well, and maybe, what do you think, Dredd?
Well, science is a self-correcting mechanism, right?
Yes, absolutely.
So, that's built right into the methodology of science. And it's sort of the Bayesian reasoning, right? Where you build on your priors. New information is not just generated in a vacuum. It's based on your priors so that you're correcting for what you formerly knew.
Mm.
You're not just coming up with new theories all the time.
Exactly.
You're modifying and adding or subtracting from the theory you currently have. So it's not like someone is going to come up tomorrow and some great discovery they found in a cave that's, you know, around for 3 million years or 30 million years or whatever. And all of a sudden Darwinism is turned on its head. That's never going to happen. Right.
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 Never. But I think we have enough evidence right now where it's like, we're getting closer to something. Right. And so for us to do a complete trajectory change would have to be like a fundamental change in like the fabric of our universe, at least our local universe. We might even figure out like in a different part of the universe, physics is completely different with completely different variables, right? And that will not be a formulaic change to like how we think about subjective science in one place working compared to how it would work on the other end of the universe. That might be interesting. Anyway. Musings. I love it. Intellectual musings. Yeah. Larry, go on ahead.
Right. Well, it's just the middle of the show. We need to take a short break and come right back. Stay tuned for the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. And we'll be right back after this short break.
All dressed up like a Christmas tree, with velvet lace and gold. They took us to their sacred house, and we did what we were told. They filled up our heads with stories, and they told us that we could be saved if we sang and praised their hero. but he never showed his face. They warned us to watch out for Satan, who'd be waiting there to capture our soul. If we didn't heed all of their wishes, he would drag us all down through that hole. We'd burn and we'd scream there forever, and our cries, they would never be heard. Yes, the innocence of little children will accept the liar's word. Get down on your knees, dear Father, and beg now forgiveness for me. Show me that you're truly sorry for the person that I couldn't be. Show me some tears now of sorrow. Show me a face that is real. My innocent and lonely existence was never left there for you to steal. They take away all of your childhood. They'll rob you of all of your dreams. Their cruelty, it hurts and will leave you with scars that can never be seen. And we are all left here to suffer with the heartache of struggle and strife. And our tears, they'll never dry up. They follow us on through life. Get down on your knees, dear sister, and beg now forgiveness from me for the cruelty towards all those children and the pain that you'll never see. The mothers that lost all their babies and never would see them again. The cries from their beds still remain in their heads, and slowly it drives them insane. Souvenirs, your paintings, your gold, your chandeliers. Take all your sermons and all of your songs. You won't be back no more. Take your church and your holy shame, your evil deeds from where you came. Your candles have melted and no one cares. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more. You won't be back no more.
Welcome back to the second half of the Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. I'm Doubter 5, and we're on WOZO Radio 103.9 LPFM, right here in Knoxville, Tennessee. Let's talk for just a moment about the Atheist Society of Knoxville. ASK was founded in 2002. We're in our 20th year and have over 1,000 members. We have weekly in-person meetings in Knoxville's Old City in Barley's Tap Room and Pizzeria. Look for us inside at the high-top tables, or if it's pretty weather, outside on the deck. We also have a Tuesday evening Zoom Ask Meetup. If you'd like to join us, email us for the link at askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. By the way, if you don't live in Knoxville, you should still go to Meetup and do a search for an atheist group in your town. Don't find one.
Don't
start one.
Start one. Start one. You talk too fast, Larry. I can't translate.
What do you want to pick up?
Hey, so we were talking about the Jesus unit, as in measuring our awareness over time. Turns out a lot of people had this idea over time. But Dredd, I'm going to give the credit to you because you brought it up for the show. So we'll give it to you. But I also thought, what if we did one instead of, it's what if we based the Jesus unit not on awareness, but on other ambiguous things that are kind of hard to track? And I thought kindness would be an interesting thing. How kind were we back in 30 AD? And now, are we more kind? Are we less kind? And can we metric that based on many times as or less than the time that we were kind during Jesus's point in time, if he existed at all? Larry or Dredd, what do you got?
Well, one of my favorite authors is Steve Pinker. Mm. You may have heard of him. Anyway, he wrote, he's written a couple of really good books, Better Angels of Our Nature. Okay. And he actually does a really good job of scouring historical records to determine whether or not we are getting better as a species in terms of how we treat each other, the freedoms and rights that we grant, in building equality and, mutual respect and all the rest. And it seems that we are on a trajectory, a positive trajectory towards that end.
It's an easy thing to overlook. It really is, especially in the midst of recent news or the agenda from my field news agencies to continue to captivate people so they can watch advertisements, so that they get you with terrible news, terrible news, terrible news. So you never feel like you can change the channel. You won't believe what happened at 6 p.m. We'll tell you then. And there's like an explosion GIF, and you're just like, oh no, oh, I have to keep watching. Yes. So I do feel like we are on a trajectory of being better and kinder and nicer to people. If anything, being more interconnected, which I feel like is the driving force of the empathy that we are.
I have a Facebook group called Humans for a Kinder World.
Mm.
And when I was doing some research to start this group, did a little math, and I found out that there's 250,000 people on Facebook belong to various kindness groups.
Good.
So there definitely is progress in that direction.
Mm. Larry, what do you think?
Well, it reminds me of what Dredd was saying about it's a long arc. Martin Luther King said, the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice. And I believe he pretty much got it right. I mean, the old days were the savage days, getting medieval on you was pretty close to the truth.
Yep.
Nowadays, all of that is seen in a bad light, if not downright illegal.
Right.
And we tend to treat each other better these days on average, although there are exceptions everywhere.
I am reminded when I went to the gym yesterday and I was working on an elliptical trainer and I was looking out the window. There was a swimming pool at our gym. And the most bizarre thing that I know no one else was paying attention to was happening that was kind of blowing my mind. And it was like a small black boy and a really tall white girl, both kids, just playing with each other in the same pool with each other. And I know that's like an easy thing to overlook. It's 2022. But like from my perspective, that was like a situation where I'm reminded of pictures from civil rights where it was illegal, one, for black people to even swim in pools like that. It was probably illegal in the pool that we had here. It's a pretty old pool. Mm-hmm. And give you a frame of reference, 1960 was the time when the first black guy got his PhD at Georgia Tech. Before that, 10 years before that, it was illegal for black people to go to Georgia Tech. So my mom couldn't have gone to the school to get her college education at the place where I eventually got my PhD. And I just see this rapid generational change where it is commonplace for different colored kids to play with each other in the South, where there's no problems whatsoever with that being the condition. And I feel like that's just setting us up for like the next advancement, next generation.
Yeah, we still have obstacles to overcome, like these alt-right groups that are coming up now, specifically Nazism built into it.
Dredd, I feel bad. Go on ahead, talk.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that one notable exception, I think, is, again, the rights of women. The gay pride, same-sex marriage, equality, greater equality for, through Black Lives Matter, attention drawn to these grave injustices over time. And yet the rolling back again, once again, of women's rights.
Yep.
It's egregious in the in the worst way. Mm. You know, I was reluctant to call myself a feminist because I didn't want to be that my entire focus. You know what I mean? But the more I, you know, this is an occasion where I now call myself a feminist.
Sure.
Because I think it is such a wrong
right.
To the rights of women and to the equality of all people in the human species to allow this sort of right wing blasting of rights that were established or had gained some ground 50 years ago and are now being rolled back. It's just painful to watch.
It's like the equivalent of having a marathon start. And just before you begin, you give one guy or one of the runners a 10-minute head start and you shoot the other player yeah, in the
exactly,
foot.
Exactly. Right,
you'd be like,
right.
The one who got shot in the foot needs help. It's like, well, we should help everybody. It's like, hold on. Yeah, this is not a fair race. We have to help this person who's bleeding on the court.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, well, you're hauling one person above the other. It's like, yeah, I am, because that person needs the help right now. And that's how we can make a better race for everybody. Make sure that person who got shot doesn't get shot in the future or any other players get shot. That's why it makes sense to be feminist in my head. And that's where my approach is for it. Like, you have to look at which group is clearly being marginalized and affected by like the misogyny that's active and actually rampant institutionalized. And how can we resolve that as effectively as possible?
Well, I think, you know, and this came up in one of our previous shows, either through the Global Atheist News, but, you know, for someone to say, well, I can't really speak to it because I don't have a uterus. No, you can speak to it. You can speak to it.
Yes.
You know, stand up for people, you know, of, you know, suffering injustice.
Right.
And, you know, take a stand, you know, that's the point.
It means even more in my head than, and I'm not saying it means less when people with uterus speak up, but like when the marginalized group speaks up, that's what should happen. Cause if you punch someone, they're going to say, ow. But if you have a person who wasn't getting punched being like, hey, stop punching that guy, that's hurting that person. That means so much more because now you have someone in the crowd, you have someone you can follow, you have someone in the audience who's empathetic to let you realize, one, I'm not as crazy as the people who are attacking you. I'm an ally, and I'm willing to speak up and cause change in the same time, too. That's so much more valuable. Right. What's up, Fred?
I was going to say also, it's not speaking in the absence of that group. Like, so I'm not going to, in the absence of, say, you know, someone talking about Jews or whatever, I'm not speaking for them. I'm speaking with them.
Correct.
So I wouldn't, you know, pretend to speak for a woman.
Right.
But I would speak with a woman in support of a woman.
Right.
In the presence of women. Right.
Right.
So that I'm not their champion. I'm not a knight in shining armor.
Exactly.
I'm there to support them. Yeah.
Right. Larry, what do you got?
What you were saying about speaking up when you see oppression or aggression, silence supports the aggressor.
Yes,
if you say nothing, then he assumes he's in the right, and there's, you know, the person he's trouncing on is in the wrong, and he has every authority to do it. Unless you question that authority, he will continue, and the people around him will take it as authority.
Yeah, right. Not only that, but like being afraid to speak up or choosing not to is prioritizing the feelings of those who would victimize, you know, the assailants of misogyny or racism or bigotry. Mm-hmm. You're putting their feelings above those who are actual victims of the thing that you are against. What are you doing?
And it takes courage. Courage is not lack of fear. It's doing something in the face of fear. Sometimes you need to have courage and exercise that courage. That's why we give some of our highest awards for an act of courage.
Mm. I'll make a point that the change we cause is not permanent and needs to be protected. Same thing with, like, for example, democracies are very fragile, and the rights that we have are just agreements that we've come to. They aren't necessarily like a thing transcendent that's been given to us. It's things that we've come together as a social contract and established and said, these are the rules that we will follow as a society, which means they are very fragile because anybody can come and take them away. And if you have rights that be taken away, they aren't truly transcendent rights because there aren't a transcendent force given to us, which means it's up to us to protect them. And if we ever fall on that, they can be taken away as they have been for women's autonomy. And I think they can also be given back because we've seen that come back and forth. So the change that we're seeing needs to be protected, needs to be maintained, because it's not a passive thing. It's not a thing where it's like, well, they'll figure it out. You have to enact it. And one of the easiest ways to do that in America is by voting. Just as a quick reminder, not a call to action, Larry, hopefully this isn't it, but early voting is open. Early voting is open, especially in Tennessee. So if you are want to vote, go to your electoral commission. You'll be able to do it immediately.
And when does it end?
It ends after the actual election, which is coming up.
Oh, really? You can vote now until
you can vote right now. You can go into election commission and vote for your local district's sheriff.
I didn't know it lasted so long.
Yeah. It's not the final election 2 years from now, but it's the one where you can decide primaries and a bunch of other stuff in your local areas as well, and make some knowledeable choices. The last thing,
and thank you, Ty, for saying that. What you just said, they're knowledgeable choices. Just calling people or just, you know, encouraging people to go out and vote is not enough.
Right.
People need to know what the issues are. They need to make rational decisions with respect to what those issues are and not just close your eyes and, you know, throw a dart at the ballot box. Right.
Correct.
You know, you got to know what you're doing.
And in Tennessee, you can use your phone when you go vote. So you can clearly look up the names. You can just Google them. There's typically websites that'll tell you everybody who's on the ballot, what their positions are, what their backgrounds are. And listen, if you are the kind of person that wants to vote red all the way up and down, there's no problem with that. But let me just say this. There are different kind of candidates who are running for a Republican office, and not all of them agree with the things that you agree with. And so you can truly fine tune your choices if you're like a straight, you know, ticket ballot or one color or the other, and choose what I feel to be the best option and not just necessarily the one that's at the top of the list just because they have Republican or Democrat in front of their name. I was at the booths. Can I talk about it? I was at the booths and I was realizing that some options didn't have a independent or Democratic option that I could look up. Some of them were just three Republicans. And I, instead of just picking one at random, I was looking him up, and one of them was like straight up, I have 14 kids. I went to a Bible college. I had 6 degrees from a Bible college. And I believe that church and state shouldn't be separated, because when you look back at the time, it only says that Congress shouldn't make church, shouldn't declare a state religion or something like that. But every state had a religion. They were Presbyterian, they were Lutherans, they were Baptists. So when you really think about it, we should really have these things combined. I'm like, this guy is crazy, and I do not want to vote for this one crazy Republican. I'm going to have to pick between these three, I'm going to at least segue myself into one that I find a bit more moderate in their approach, and at least, you know, not pushing us further towards the doom and gloom that we could potentially reach if we don't protect the advancements that we've made through the changes that we have. Again, change doesn't happen without a challenge. And I like Larry's point. You can't challenge something without courage, because it's important to speak up, and it's important to keep speaking up and make your points be well known and not let that silence take over. It's absolutely imperative that we maintain that as a culture. It's getting close to the end of the show. Dread, some final thoughts on this. So you agree that people are getting more kinder? Is there a unit number that you would place on that? Are we 4 times taller, 4.6 high? Well, do you want to reference your shirt at all?
Yeah, we have to have so we got to shift it from Jesus units to kindness units.
I like it.
That's cool. That's definitely got to be the shift there. Talk to Robert Anton Wilson and get him to write a new sci-fi with kindness units instead.
Yeah, we need a paragon of kindness. Go ahead, Johnson. Joe Sky, could you repeat that?
I'm saying, unfortunately, Mr. Wilson is dead.
Oh, wow. We got to talk to his kids then. His 14 kids.
Yeah, he does. He has kids. one of the girls is a Buddhist.
They tend to be kind if they're not radical.
Dred, I'm going to throw something at you, just because I think it's a little tongue-in-cheek, but what if instead of Jesus units, we called it bacon units?
And the reason why I like bacon units.
One, everybody agrees bacon's nice, except for religious people.
Yeah, so I suppose Jewish people would not be kind to bacon units.
Yeah.
Right. And I'm just like, hey, baking units from Jesus time
have,
to now.
We could have pasta units.
We could have pasta units.
Everyone can eat pasta.
Everyone can eat pasta. That's true. It's true. Okay. I like it. Larry, thoughts? Kindness in humanity. We're going up. Challenge. We should protect it. Any other wise sage advice from the man who wears suspenders, even when he's in a virtual reality?
I can't think of anything right offhand, but I can come back to it.
We need a drawstring on the back of you that we could just pull, and you can just give us some nice that sound like, oh, okay.
Well, that's just hard to come right out of the middle, out of the air. I need a topic, ask me about a particular thing, and I can probably come back to you.
Okay, but fair enough.
Just give me some advice.
It's not bad to brush your teeth every day. Brush your teeth every day. Hey, that's not bad. Dread.
I was going to say that, going back to the rights of women, is that in order to really make that solid, because Roe versus Wade was actually a pretty weak foundation for women's rights, is that it has to be enshrined as an amendment to the Constitution. That is guaranteed as part of the Constitution and not as something that the Supreme Court can just overturn based on their affiliation with religion or politics.
Well, the Supreme Court is the newest arm of the Republican Party.
But also realize that the Supreme Court, 9 justices, if I recall correctly, 6 of them on the conservative side. So truly 3 people are the ones that are making these decisions, in a sense, pushing them down.
Right.
And so it's not a reflection of American culture that 3 people decided that they don't like something. And because of that, we don't have to accept it for what it is. So if there are protests, support the protests. If there are, distastement for it, remember why you were distasted from it and don't just swallow it up for the next election cycle. Make your voice heard. And speak to the culture of wanting that change, because that has power. And it's only when you give it up that the nefarious sides of things win. So hope is hard. Hope is hard. So is living in a world that you don't want to be in, right? So is living in a world that's falling out of control. You can choose your heart, right? You can choose to make a change. Pick your heart. Pick your heart is what I'm saying. Okay, that's about it for me. Larry, we're going to go through plug-in. Joe Sky, do you have anything that you'd like to plug?
Yes, I do. I have a Facebook page called the Nelophidian Chronicles. It's not always about atheism and religion. Right now, it's kind of political. I also have the Facebook group Humans for a Kinder World. And we're very active in the kindness movement.
Thanks. Cool.
Dredd?
You can find me on my YouTube channel, Mind Pirate, MindPyrate. I live stream this at 7 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time on Sunday mornings, and also on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, I stream the Global Atheist News Review through Free Thought Productions. So
cool.
If you like, subscribe and come check me out.
Anything and any random, let me one, give us that title for the book again if you have it nearby.
Are you talking about the Daniel
Bacteria to Bach? Yeah. Yep.
Bacteria to Bach and back.
Nice.
It's the Evolution of Minds. It's a fascinating read. Daniel Dennett is such an amazing author. He's a philosopher who's been working in this field of minds and consciousness for, almost his entire career. And he's had a long and illustrious career. So check him out.
I will tell you this. I have rewatched Contact, the movie. Okay.
Ah, yes. And
as regret, I don't, all the problems I had with it make me feel like I didn't watch the movie the first time properly, because I was just like, well, it's got this. And then it did the thing. I'm just like, oh, okay. Well, and that's pretty good. And I was like, oh, that's kind of clever. And then I was like, oh, there's pretty good representation here too. Okay, fine. But you know what else also kind of bothers me? And also like everything that was like, it was written by like a woman and it was like promoted by like a science head. I'm just like, okay, I can't find the grips that I was holding on to. So I'm willing to let it go. But the problem, the other problem that I have with the movie is like, how frustrated I am that there's just not closure to the movie. Mm-hmm. And that sort of alludes to like, it's not a scientific result. It's more of just like more open questions that could hopefully be approached. I also don't like this too. I also say this too. Here's my last thing. The alien who's like, thanks for coming here. And I know a bunch of people died as you try to get here, but you're not ready for us to come here. It's like, you could have sent us a text message then. Because we literally spent trillions and trillions of dollars trying to get here twice. So just text us next time if we're not ready and let us know. Because we had people dying trying to get up here, man. You're wasting our time. Messes me up. I hate it if an alien told me that. I'd be like, oh, well, watch out. We're coming for you now. Yeah, that's how you make enemies. That's how you make enemies. Yeah. Anyway. I'm Let's Chat on YouTube. Larry.
My content can be found at digitalfreethought.com. Be sure to click on the blog button for our radio show archives, atheist songs, and many articles on the subject of atheism. My YouTube channel can be found by searching for Doubter 5 or digitalfreethought.com. You can find my book, Atheism, What's It All About, on Amazon. And you can find the Atheist Society of Knoxville at knoxvilleatheist.org or just by Googling Knoxville Atheist. If you have questions for the show, you can send them to askanatheist@knoxvilleatheist.org or letschatse@gmail.com. You can find this show on Apple iTunes, Pocket Cast, Amazon, Pocket Cats everywhere. Just search for Digital Free Thought Radio Hour. If you're watching this on YouTube, be sure to like and subscribe. Remember, everybody is going to somebody else's hell. The time to worry about it is when they prove that heavens and hells and souls are real. Until then, don't sweat it. Enjoy your life, and we'll see you next week. Say bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Amen.